And welcome to Inside the Disney Vault, the podcast where we talk about every single Disney animated movie. And my name is Oscar.
I'm Claire.
And I'm Rachel.
And here in the vault, oh boy, do we have a very, very special guest today. She's a comedian. She's a writer. She's a host of her very own podcast, Lizard People, which is like choice podcast. If you haven't heard it, please listen to it. It's Caitlin Hempstead.
Yay! Hey, I'm so happy you found me in this spooky vault. There's no food in here.
They're not in this area.
Not in this area. No way.
Not so much.
Caitlin, thanks for being here.
Yeah. Oh, it's my joy. I had such a fun time watching this film.
Yes.
Yeah. And I must call it a film and not a movie because it is haute art.
Yeah, you're right. It is a film, to be sure.
Yeah, and here we are at this section of the vault, and like we're seeing a lot of really cool stuff. I, for example, am seeing a really long receipt for the Pampered Poodle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Caitlin, I actually did find you some food. I have these walnuts, but they're super crushed.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm playing with this yo-yo.
Oh, you know what I think I see? I see Bette Midler.
Oh, my goodness.
Bette Midler this whole time.
Bette, do you want to come over and chat
with us?
She's walking away from us.
She's walking. She's on her way.
She threw that gold wrap over her shoulder and flounced away.
Okay, she's over there chatting with Steve Martin, pretending like she doesn't even hear us.
Angela Lansbury. And
James Earl Jones.
Wait, they just all disappeared.
Oh, wow.
Penn & Teller must have pulled an illusion.
Right. Well, if that didn't give it right away, of course, we're talking about the movie Fantasia 2000.
Baby.
Hey, Claire, you want to take us to some bare necessities of the movie?
I do. Okay, so Fantasia 2000, I mean, technically it was released in 1999.
Yeah.
At the very, very end of it. But I would say, you know, for all intents and purposes, we are there, baby. We are at the 2000 mark.
Wasn't Princess Song 1999 released in, like, 1997? If you think about it.
Yeah.
What was that?
Princess Song 1999.
Oh, Prince's Song. I thought you said Princess Song. No. You know
that's
the
what I heard too.
I was like, what princess song?
I was like, I don't know what that movie is, but I want to see it.
Given the context of this podcast, that makes sense.
Yes, I am tuned in. I am all princesses all the time. Yeah. So the budget for this was somewhere between 80 and 85 million, and it made 90.9 million, so just a little bit of its money back. It was a 38th Disney animated feature film, and obviously it was a sequel of sorts to Fantasia. They at one point wanted to revamp Fantasia and re-release it a bunch and like just sort of like swap the shorts in and out, and they actually wanted this movie to have many more repeats from Fantasia, but it ended up only having the Sorcerer's Apprentice that we have seen before in Fantasia. Mm-hmm. And that's because the reason they want to do it is because the release of Fantasia in 1991 for home video was very successful. So Michael Eisner was like, you guys, if we keep popping these babies out, people will keep watching them.
Mm-hmm.
So this was 9 years in the making. And that's where we're going to start it, guys. Actually, this film, also interesting fun fact, is that it was released in 75 IMAX theaters under a special contract. And it was the first animated feature to be released in IMAX.
IMAX would have been
stunning.
Amazing.
So, Caitlin, have you seen Fantasia 2000 before? And what's your association with the movie or Disney in general?
Okay, so I have a memory of Fantasia 2000, and I'm starting to think it might not be accurate. Because in my memory, we were on a cabin trip. Sometimes my family would go up to Tahoe with another family or two and rent a cabin. And in my memory, we popped in Fantasia 2000 in the VCR when I was like 11 or 12 years old, which would have been like 2 or 3 years after it was released.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got really bored really quickly and went to bed.
And you guys were like, never mind.
This is a hard pass. And now I'm thinking that might not have been true, because when we were watching The Tin Soldier, I had like a sudden visceral, like, I know this. Uh-huh. I've been here before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it really just made me realize, like, no, I think I have seen this. And then from then on out, it was an emotional roller coaster.
Oh, yeah.
It really was. So, yeah, I think I have seen it before. I have some really deep associations that I don't even remember.
It's repressed.
Yeah, I think I might have repressed some of it.
Yeah. It's tricky with these ones that they call package films because sometimes they'll show the shorts in different context. And so maybe you haven't seen the whole movie, but you've seen one of them.
That might be possible.
Because I kind of feel the same way about some of these.
Yeah, maybe I saw some of them on like at camp.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows where?
Where do they show
where you were popping in?
Summer camp?
Summer camp? Yeah. School?
I'll confess, when you said the movie was Fantasia 2000, Oscar, I was like, oh, man. Yeah. I was like, I want one of the peak Disney movies. I know you guys are in the era of Hercules. I was like, ooh, maybe I'll get a really juicy one. And I was like, oh, Fantasia 2000. But guys, I loved it.
I'm so glad.
It was good.
Isn't that wild, though? It's because also I was dreading Fantasia 2000 because of the horrendous.
The truth comes out.
The horrendous original Fantasia. I was just like.
Don't say horrendous.
Cat's out of the bag if you don't know. I hated Fantasia.
We've been on a journey since Fantasia, and I think we've been spoiled since.
Oh, without a doubt. But even back then, watching Fantasia for the first time, I was like, I don't like this. I don't like it. I don't get it. Yeah. Package films are a bit of a chore. But, you know, we'll talk about the movie.
I thought it was because of a certain sea mammal that maybe you knew was coming.
We'll get to that.
Just a little tease.
But, Caitlin, what is your association with Disney? Are you, like, a big Disney head? Are you, like, what sort of... I mean, like, what's your association there?
I must confess, until pretty recently in my life, and I think that I would be dishonest if I didn't tell you, I was kind of a Disney hater.
This is amazing. This is a first. This is great. We want those hot takes.
Yeah, I've said some pretty derisive things about Disney.
Like?
Derisive? Such as, they are movies for children, not adults. These are boring.
I would never
pay $12.50 to see a Disney movie in theaters.
Very interesting that we had you watch Fantasia 2000 and you seem to have enjoyed it after saying things like that.
That was risky on our part.
But what changed it for you?
I think a few things have changed for me. One of them is becoming, I think that was sort of through college-ish and a little bit after years. And it still sometimes slips out. But I think what really changed for me was moving to LA and meeting all the people who truly love Disney and are functional, wonderful, mature adults,
Caitlin,
and not just like stunted children.
That is our journey together. That is
you too?
That point of view is exactly mine. Yeah.
Amazing. Mm-hmm, and did you like rewatch the movies and go like, oh my God, these are golds?
Well, I've only seen like four or five.
Wait,
out of all of them. So like
I
that
I don't think I've heard this backstory.
Well, that's
the start of this podcast.
Wait, oh my God, I had no idea. I only started listening like halfway through.
Oh,
our dear listeners may not know the start of the idea for the podcast.
It started
What was the I was brought on?
yeah. But it started out with Claire and I talking about we went to Disneyland.
We were at Disneyland.
Right. And I was also like a huge like Disney being like, oh, Disney's not really my thing. I totally missed that whole thing. It's not for me.
Yes,
it's for kids.
Totally.
And the ones that I watched, I either was okay with, but whatever. It wasn't like a big deal for me. But moving to LA and watching people like be into Disney and going to Disneyland with Claire, you were the first person that took me to Disneyland.
It's true. And I had not gone to Disneyland until I was an adult, yet I have always been someone that people have associated with Disney. And so that was an interesting place to come from too. And so I went with Oscar and I think one day we were like, why do people like love Disney? What is it about Disney? Can we figure this out? Maybe we should do like some kind of project or like a way of interviewing people. And then we started talking about how we hadn't seen a lot of the movies.
Right.
So I think that we decided that we needed to watch all of them, and then that could be the angle that we wanted to go at it
exactly
from. Because we do touch on Disneyland a lot, and we like to bring people on who have a connection, and that's when we thought of Rachel.
Rachel is the Disney queen, not only just Disney queen but the scribe of the parks. Like, you just know everything about the parks that, I mean, I don't, and Claire doesn't know, you know?
And the parks converted me, too. I started dating someone, my nice boyfriend, who works for Disney and could get me in for free. And I was like, ugh. But I went to A Bug's World, and I was floored. Like, it's all amazing, and like all of the attention to detail is beautiful, and like the joy in the air is palpable. It's like how people describe Coachella, where you're like, ugh, it's hot, it's dusty, I don't care that much about music, I don't like techno. And then they're like, no, you have to, you don't understand, there's like a vibe, there's something in the air. And I feel like when you go to Disneyland, like the meticulous attention to detail, there's something in the air, everywhere you look there's something delicious to eat. And then I just walked into a Bugs World and it was like, oh, this is a space that's just for joy and fun and nothing else.
Yeah, because you know, you're not the first person I've heard that who has said that, because it's true. It's like, it's the real deal when you walk into it. Like, it's the real place. It's not pretending to be something it's not. It just is that. It is a Bugs Land, you know? It is Cars Land.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. I really feel like it's one of the few places that magic, truly, this is going to sound corny as heck, but there's truly magic in Disneyland.
I agree.
And I'm sure that there's magic in Disney World.
I hate that I agree. Because the cynical teen in me is still like, it's just, they just want your money. It's just a money extracting machine. Yeah. But it's like, it works.
Speaking of magic, Fantasia 2000, do you want to just dive right in?
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
What are you winking about?
Well, first we should probably talk about the crispy critters.
I love the title of this being Crispy Critters.
They look so good. So the opening is very reminiscent of the first Fantasia. Yes. It's like colors and shapes. And you guys can talk about your crispy critters. I think this is Beethoven's fifth symphony, right? Or is it ninth?
You are classy as hell right now.
I mean, I don't know what symphony it is.
Dun, 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 dun. For the listener.
Yeah, it's like.
So classic.
Yeah. You can just Google dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And it'll tell you which one.
One sampled by Robin Thicke. Song, Wanna Get You Alone. Do you guys remember that?
That was Robin Thicke. That was on a CD
that I got from Nordstrom's BP Teen when I bought a bunch of pairs of jeans, because it was my favorite place to buy jeans, and they gave you a free CD, and that song was on it, and it was a soundtrack of my summer.
That was a great song. I can't believe it was Robin Thicke. I remember it from
Blurred Lines Thick.
Glee. I remember from Glee, because they'd always have like the like acapella version.
Because you walk pretty and because you talk pretty and you make me sweat and I'm sorry.
This is the karaoke version of Inside the Disney Vault.
So I think that sort of towards the same moment, you and I had the same realization, because I was like, those look like, and then Oscar whispered, nachos. And they're these little triangular butterflies that looked exactly like golden crispy nachos.
Yeah, it was two triangles together that looked like a bird. At first, I thought it was like origami. It looked like cranes from far away.
Yeah.
And then you got up close and it really was just two triangles.
And this is our first sample of how this movie uses computer technology, whereas, of course, the original Fantasia was just hand-drawn.
That's right.
It's interesting because this was obviously released in 1999 and probably, I guess, started in 1990 then, if they were working on it for 10 or 9 years. So the animation looks a little rudimentary because of it. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we get our first little taste of what, I don't know, the quality and how spoiled I feel like we have become since.
Yeah.
Because some of this looks...
I will say, like, for the crispy critters section, it didn't look as bad as the other ones did, because it's not hard to, like, mess up, like, rudimentary shapes.
Yeah, it's abstract. Yeah.
It's very cool. I mean, like, was the intention to make me think that there were Doritos flying around with like blue corn chips too, and then like nacho cheese erupting from the ground? Mm. No, but that's what I got out of it.
Yeah,
and I had a good time thinking they were chips.
Yeah.
CGI is to make you hungry. Yeah. And that's it.
It truly was the best Doritos.
So there was food in this.
You're right. There's food in the vaults. I don't know what I'm talking about.
So they were dealing with a lot of new software, and not in this segment, but in the Pines of Rome, Rome segment, they created new software for that one. So it's a lot going on.
What did you think of the Crispy Critters segment? Did you like that?
I mean, I didn't say it with you, but I also saw chips. And then I just couldn't get Doritos out of my head.
Yeah, it was just Doritos.
I think I'm also hungry.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, ditto.
I mean, I saw those chips. There are also a lot of bubbles. And then that first shot was like, looked like a crystal candy mountain thing to me that kind of broke apart into the chips.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot. And then I don't really remember.
Then there were bad bats, I guess.
Bad bats.
That were scary and dark.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and then there was a rainbow of power. And then, Caitlin,
let me ask you, if I were to ask you like, hey, Caitlin, what this segment, like what's the narrative of this segment? What would you tell me?
Sure. A crystal cave erupts into 1,000 nacho chips. The chips fly for their lives through a volcano of nacho cheese. Spooky bats come to take over the world. They form a rainbow of power and they retake the earth.
That's
I think
is
pretty straightforward.
I mean, that must be how they pitched this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so.
But a lot of this movie really just like astonished me to think that like someone just listened to these songs and was like, I know. First, the little girl's bouncing her ball. Then we see the guy getting out of it. Like they just from nothing. Imagine this incredibly detailed story. Yeah.
Synesthesia.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know.
I believe it. You said it so
possibly. That's what happens when you take LSD and your senses cross wires.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe, I mean, you listen to sounds and you see colors and shapes.
Yeah, synesthesia
is
when you
stories.
See.
It
when
just
you see,
made me stressed.
Sounds.
Yeah.
When sounds
yeah, it's
become
any
visible
of the,
to
yeah,
you.
It's like different, yeah, different yeah. senses.
So that's what it is. I mean, so yeah.
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 So out of 5 Dorito Krispies.
How many Dorito Krispies do you give Krispy Critters?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Krispy Critters.
I want to give it 3 crispy
that's
Doritos.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to give it
3. Yeah, I was going to give it 3. Yeah,
it was like it was a start. It was a start to the movie.
Oh,
but
Caitlin's giving the look. Yeah.
I feel like a cold-hearted bitch. I'm going to give it. Like a 1.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I gotta start low, but I'm trust me,
it only goes up.
No,
it's all uphill from here.
I'm thinking of the other ones, and compared to other ones, this one's probably more of a 2.
Maybe it's not fair to compare, but yeah.
Yeah. But like, are we going on a Krispy Critter scale the whole time, or like, does the scale change?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the reason why I gave it a 3 is because truly. Going into it, my expectation was like 1 for everything.
Yeah.
And then when Krispy Critters didn't disappoint me, I was like,
No, I think it was a good start. It was like a warm up, you know?
Yeah.
So the
a
next
little appetizer.
Yeah.
So then we meet
Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Great character.
Oh, Steve Martin doing bits about
Which,
playing
by the way,
violin.
Steve Martin is a huge Disney fan. He worked in the parks.
That's right.
Yeah. I thought he worked at Knott's Berry Farm. Not Scary Farm.
I don't know. He might have, but
possibly
I know he worked at Disneyland.
He definitely worked at Disneyland.
Because he wrote about it in his book, Born Standing Up. And he worked at the Magic Shop. And now when you go into the Magic Shop on Main Street, you can see a signed picture of Steve Martin.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a big crush on him for my whole life. Oh. So the second he walked on the screen, I was like, yes,
I love him.
Yeah,
he's
this is
great.
Really an all 90s like all star lineup of hosts. It's great. Yeah. So he talks about Fantasia and then we go into the Pines of Rome, which is Oscar's very favorite thing in the world.
Oh,
a bunch of gigantic whales swimming around in his face.
If you don't know, because you haven't listened before, Oscar is afraid of whales.
Don't say it like it's a crazy thing.
Like, but not like afraid,
no,
like they're
no,
on the
like
screen.
Viscerally afraid.
I don't know,
like,
did you see?
Like I said, like it's as if we were watching someone operate
this
on an eyeball.
So
it's like revulsion.
I cannot believe that we're talking
like,
about this
like
on this podcast.
Saying ew, gross, ew, gross.
It's yeah, it reminds me of yeah. I said pimple popping video because it reminds me of my reaction when someone's like, "Hey, look at this," and it's like a nasty pimple popping YouTube video. And I'm like,
"Yeah,
no,
see, I get that.
Who
I get
are these
it."
People you hanging out with?
Sure. Bad dickhole people. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to swear this much on the
No, it's fine.
Please.
It's totally
fine. So you hate whales. Where does
it
come from?
Y'all, for those of you listening, you guys, if you heard the Pinocchio episode, you definitely know that I have a true fear. It truly is a lifelong fear of whales. Whales look gross. They look really disgusting to me. It's like if you were to watch them like a week, like how people freak out about snakes or roaches or rats or, but like I... That's how I feel about whales.
So that brings us to our tattoo time.
Hell no. What? Absolutely not.
That would be the ultimate.
Face your fear.
Yeah, that's how you would get
no
over it.
No way.
And then
no.
Every time you look down, you scream.
You go, oh, just.
Can I tell you something? I tried facing my fear when I went go to Disneyland, and I tried to go to the Pinocchio dark ride. I've been on the Pinocchio dark ride.
Yeah.
And every single time I am not able to watch the Monstro part, I close my eyes every
did
time.
Did you see the Monstro part the first time, though?
No, I didn't.
How did you know it was
because
there?
I knew it was coming. And I, what I did see was Monstro in the storybook.
Yeah, storybook.
And
land.
It like really freaked me out. So I was like, if I can't deal with Monstro here, I can't deal with him in this dark ride.
I don't even remember him in Storybook Land.
Oh, he's the giant whale that you go through at the beginning.
Okay, of course.
He's the giant
he's
whale.
Big
he's
ass the thing whale that he's the afraid you? Of.
Really big whale that your boat goes into. Oh, that's how you get to Storybook Land.
Anyway,
but that's scarier than the one in the.
Caitlin, why don't you give a scenario? Like,
Caitlin,
break
you
it
get
down
to,
for
you're,
us.
You're good at
to recap all of them. Yeah. Okay. Whales in the North Pole. Normal, you'd think, but one baby whale fights some gulls and crashes into the inside of an iceberg. He's lost for a little while, but could be a she, rejoins her parents. And then the baby schloops up into an alien beam of light into the sky. Also, the whales have been flying this whole time. Underwater, overwater, doesn't matter. And then they all go up into the clouds, and then all the whales of the whole Earth go into the clouds and, I guess, leave the Earth behind?
That's exactly yeah. right. And yeah. that was as if it was, like, translated but, from text to talk.
Yeah. yeah. But then when they amazing. Get to the top of the clouds, it's also water.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's no differentiation between what sky and water is yeah. because they're yeah. always breaking through one to the other.
Well, maybe the idea is that, like, the ocean to whales are the sky. Is the sky?
I like the way you said it after the short ending.
Is the sky?
The whole world is an ocean.
It's all the circle.
Is it the whole,
of
it's
life.
All an infinity circle,
yeah.
right?
The whole
water,
world.
I am water as you
we're
are
all
sky
underwater
as
right
we are
now.
Sky.
Yeah, we're all underwater.
But all there's together. Also a like a more underwater. there's like
and they're underwater. There is an underwater
yeah,
for
yeah,
them.
Yeah. But yeah. we can't see it because we'd have to go very far underwater. Yeah.
This segment's a bit of a mind trip.
So let's go ahead and rate it.
Yeah.
Out
yeah.
of...
what I will say, the graphics are real bad, right? Like, we can all agree.
They look
in
like
parts.
A, yeah, they look like a rough draft of, like, what would be a rough draft of a movie today.
Yes.
Yeah. They look like it's, a weird animatic, like yeah. a CGI animatic almost.
It's bad for now, but it was good for then. Yes. Yeah. But also, what I will say is when they got up close to the faces, it was, like, hand-drawn, and it looked great.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
like, the baby whale's face looked ooh. Cute and it was, you could tell it was hand drawn. But then when they like do like the big wide shots mm-hmm. of them flying
of
through
all
the
those
air,
whales flying.
It just looks gosh. Not great.
So this is the one that they invented the new computer program to make, but they couldn't get the eyes right. So that's why they hand drew the eyes.
Oh, interesting.
And that's the best part about yeah. it.
Just hand draw everything.
Yeah, yeah let's rate it. How
out
many?
Of five underwater air waters.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
yeah
air,
waters.
Five
air waters. Okay,
air waters.
Five underwater earth air waters.
Yep, five underwater earth air waters. I'll just I'll get it going. I'm gonna give it a 2.5
mm-kay.
Because what was that even about? And then it seemed like it ended, but it didn't end, and then it was another the same thing again.
I'm gonna give it a 3. Just,
oh,
just a tiny bit higher. Wow. The baby whale was so cute that I could barely stand it, and it wasn't about global warming, which was my fear and a thing that I thought I would have to confront.
Do you not believe in global warming?
No. No, I just didn't want to feel sad
yeah.
today.
Oh, they thought they were going to be like about dying it, whales.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
They're probably dead now. Just kidding.
No. Oscar's happy about that.
No.
Would you be happy if all the whales were dead?
Of course not. I just don't want them to hang out with me.
They can live their lives, just not near
them. They can fly. I think I give this one a 1.5. I was going to give it a 1, but I really do like the ending when they're up in the clouds and it looks like water again. It's really pretty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'm going to give this a
0.
1. Okay. Because of the same reasons Rachel said at the very end when the whales were coming out, the way that the waves caught there, it was like fluid. It felt really fluid. And that part is animated, I think. Yeah. So it made me sad because it's like, oh, you had such a good thing with just animation. Mm. There's no need. I mean, I get it. Like, technical advancement in animation is cool. But the hand-drawn stuff, I mean, I'm noticing we're losing some of that magic that Disney, we went over this, like, has. And we felt like, I felt like we lost it with these, like, weird animation stuff. And also, I'm, you know, whales. I'm glad that's over with. All right, moving on.
So, Quincy Jones, baby. Ooh. Quincy Jones introduces Rhapsody in Blue. Mm-hmm. And this segment is drawn in the style of caricaturist Al Hirschfeld.
And who was the inspiration for Genie? Yeah.
This was the bee's goddamn knees.
All right, Kisses, why don't you break it down for us?
Yeah. You don't want to talk about it first.
There's 4-ish people in the city who are sad. They're sad and they're broken people and nothing's ever going to be good for them. They go about their day and you think, boo hoo, New York is bad. Then, through a series of mishaps and mayhem and gorgeous music, beautiful line drawing, perfect animation, wacky shenanigans, they all come to realize that they can have their dreams. And, you know, sometimes life is hard, but at the end, it's always worth it.
Yeah.
Wow.
You are so good at this. It's really good.
Well said.
Yeah, I loved it. Did you guys love it?
Oh my gosh.
I loved it.
It was so cool.
It's like a treat to watch because it's so stylized in its way. And it just, the story, I mean, it's fun because it doesn't have a traditional sort of narrative. Like, it wasn't really like a beginning, middle, end kind of thing. Because we start with the one character that's the drummer and he's like late for work. And we find out he's a construction worker. And they're just all these, it's just everybody, like you said, going about their day and they kind of weave in and out of each other.
And there's these beautiful, like, montage or like sort of like physical set pieces of people like pouring out of the hotel or like getting onto the subway.
It reminded me of that part in Singing in the Rain when he's like, gotta dance, you know, the city, like when they showed like the city lights part, just the set background was really cool.
You cannot relate, Oscar.
I've never seen that movie.
Gosh. Well,
it's one of my favorites.
We'll get there when we do our other podcast called Inside
Potting in the Rain.
Potting in the Rain. Yeah, called one episode
Water Earth Sky Water.
Well, I mean, technically Singing in the Rain is counts as Disney because they had it in the park.
They did?
Yeah, at the Great Movie Ride, they had a Singing in the Rain scene.
Whoa.
With animatronic Gene Kelly.
Yes. Weird.
Yeah. Oscar, you have to sing Singing in the Rain.
You have to sing it right now.
That's what I say. You have to sing it, and then you have to see it, because it's truly wonderful.
Okay, cool. I'll get on that.
All right, so, what do you guys think of Rhapsody in Blue?
I loved it. I loved all the characters in it. Like, I thought the little girl was my favorite. The scenes where they were, her nanny was taking her all of her after school programs or whatever was so funny. First, it's like a ballet class. Then, like, I forget what was next.
The singing lesson.
Then there was like painting and then swimming. Oh, when you pan over to see her in her swim gear, it's so
very
funny.
Cute.
It's so
fun. Just the visual story. It was almost hard to believe that like no one talked in that.
Yeah.
Because the visual storytelling was so perfect.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, it's fun because then she goes to a piano lesson. What is wrong with
a banana lesson?
She goes to her banana lesson. And she's just like a virtuoso.
Yeah.
And that's just part of it. And it's not a big deal.
But it like goes with the music.
Yeah. Like a crescendo.
I know. You keep forgetting that it's like this whole thing is just orchestra that they're putting pictures to because it seems like the orchestra is going along with the pictures. Yes.
And throughout the movie, I kept sort of forgetting that it wasn't just background soundtrack.
Yeah.
They made the movie to suit the music.
Yes.
Yeah. Ugh.
And the difference between the first two that we saw in this one is because it has a narrative thread.
Yeah.
It's not like abstract. It's not abstract. It's like a truly like, here's what happens and then here's what happens. And guess what? It's all happening at the same time, which I think is really cool. And so conceptually difficult to do. Yeah. All of them like matching each other and then like splitting apart and then coming back together at the very end, I thought was really cool. My favorite character was like the guy with the glasses being the like the put upon husband.
Yeah, who just wanted to dance and be a star.
Yeah, he's just a weirdo. So
that guy was modeled after, I think, the John Coltrane, the professor.
Yeah.
Really?
Who also was
When I saw him, I was like, he looks like John Coltrane.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the same as the sidekick in The Rescuers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He's one of my professors at NYU.
Yeah, so then it's fun because people, they like start solving each other's problems a little bit because the construction worker goes to be a drummer, but like should have killed that guy on the street hurling a jackhammer off of a building. But instead, the guy who's unemployed gets a job.
Yes. And the little girl walks directly out into traffic, chasing her
ball.
And
her parents save her. And that's all she wanted was to hang out with her parents.
Let me ask you guys, did this take place in the Great Depression?
That's what I thought.
It wasn't
But
current.
Then I wasn't sure.
It said jobs sparse.
Scarce. It also said 2 eggs, 25 cents.
Right.
So I figure, unless it's
but
really...
But I'll tell you, you can get a dozen for $4. So that's not far off.
In the diner.
Okay.
So yeah, I assume it was
right.
set sometime
But you know
there.
What? I gotta say, that short dealt with some real life issues, such as police corruption, taxi cabs not stopping for black people, people being trapped in loveless marriages who are probably gay.
Yeah.
It was I don't know, man. It just, it really touched
class,
on everything.
I mean, also like
class issues.
Like the girl was like, parents. She's a very rich woman. The girl's a very rich woman. Oh my God. The girl's very rich. She doesn't, what she wants is spending time with her family. She can't have it.
Right. She has all the material things.
Yeah. It touches on everything, and but it's all part of New York, right? It's like a love letter to New York. Yeah. Isn't that so cool?
It was almost as if New York was a character.
Ooh.
I have never thought about anything like that before. It's crazy.
New York being a character.
He went to film school.
This one kind of reminded me of All the Cats Join In. I mean, I don't know what it was about it. Maybe it's the same time frame.
I think
that it was
like
set
the
in.
Shapes and the colors are kind of
similar. Like simple line drawings.
I love the really color scheme of this too. How beautiful. People were like purple and blue and green.
But the coolest thing about it is that everyone was, and the thing with Al Hirschfeld is that like they all look uniquely different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Everything was a snowflake. Even like the little side character that you don't pay attention to, like there's no one else that looks just like that person. Which brings me to my tattoo time. Claire pointed it out while we were watching it, but the waitress in the diner had these amazing eyelashes.
Effie Trinket
eyelashes. That were so... And they had like, they were long and had little dots at the end.
Yeah.
But I would love to do a pair of eyes with those eyelashes.
I just
love it. And again, it's another sign of like, if you remember that scene where everyone just busts out of the hotel door, if you like freeze frame, you could see like, oh, this looks so uniquely different from the other ones.
There was like one woman on the subway that looked just like grumpy and angry. And I was like, I love that one.
Yeah. Is she the one that had the kerchief on and looked kind of like a witch?
Probably. She was like so fun looking.
Yeah, this is really fun because I think you could take any still from this and it would make great art.
Yes.
Yeah,
there's a lot of times where I was watching this whole movie and I was like, ooh, I want to put that on my wall because I have a lot of Disney art on my wall.
Yeah.
It was such a weird combination of like bad early CGI and like gorgeous hand drawn.
Do you want to rate this, baby?
Out of 5
rivets.
Rivets.
Yep, that's what would I think sums us up.
You know what I mean? Rivets at a construction site.
Yeah.
And it was riveting.
How riveted were you?
How many rivets do you give this one?
5. I loved it. It was great. Great characters, great drawings. Fun.
I honestly can't think of any points to take away from it. I also give it 5 rivets.
Yeah.
It showed me the magic of what animation can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it 5 rivets. It's such a fun romp. It's just like a story and a a visual ballet.
Yeah.
Don't laugh. Yeah. It's true.
It's very true.
What is ballet not visual?
Oh, that's a good point. You said a dumb thing.
Wow. Never mind. Wow. Very dumb.
Visual ballet.
I was prepared to let you watch the ballet.
You mean music? No, you heard the ballet.
You hear stomping. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was an audio ballet.
Yeah.
Sorry, Oscar.
I will also give this 5 vervets. I think this is the prime example of what Fantasia should be. I mean, I think this was like Fantasia 2000 prime. Like, matches the music to a T. It like takes us to a place. You see the love of music. Of New York City, of these characters, and like
of art, of cartooning, art. Yeah. Animation. Yeah.
It truly is a perfect marriage of every single thing mixed together. I love this one.
It made me miss New York.
Yeah, it made me miss New York too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never lived there, but I missed it too. From vacation.
Yeah. Bette Midler, guys. Bette Midler.
Bette Midler shows up.
She is
then
a
she
diva.
Had the whole speech of like, here's the things that didn't make it to the original movie, which I was like, why? Why have this?
Yeah, how they could like you waste Bette Midler?
Yeah. Like, well, yeah, they keep trying to incorporate things they didn't use.
Yeah, but it was interesting to see because we all know about the Salvador Dali short that never came. And then also...
I did not know. That was a shock to me.
Baseball. Oh, yeah. Crazy?
And then Mary Blair was going to do a baby ballet for the second Fantasia that they were planning, but it never got made. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. I mean, it was fun seeing that little like shout out to Mary Blair.
Shout out to those visual ballet babies.
Yeah. It was just fun to see all the ones that could have been but never did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she talked about the one that we ended up seeing, which was...
The Steadfast Tin Soldier.
Yeah.
Which is
a
Hans Christian Andersen story.
That's right.
If I may butt in...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a parable about toxic masculinity.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
And I stand by it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, give Possession us a breakdown, Caitlin, sure. of this one.
Yeah. That's a new segment we have.
We got to bring her on every week.
Caitlin's
now.
Breakdown, yeah.
Yeah, we'll just bring her in every time.
Some tin boys in a box are ready to fight. All the toys come to life, but not in a fun Toy Story way, in a sort of creepy, sad way. So one tin soldier only has one leg. He looks over a gorgeous ballerina and she's only got one leg. Oh no, she was just standing on point like they do spinning around. But she likes him anyway. They have stuff to talk about. They have a lot in common. They're cute together. Wham! Here comes the Jack in the Box. Mm-hmm. I forgot the name of the toy. He's a real heel. He's a Chad if I've ever seen one. Yeah. He thinks he is owed that woman's affection. He thinks he deserves it because he gave her the most flowers. Yeah. And he gets violent as they always do. Mm-hmm. And he traps the beautiful ballerina in a glass and he pushes the tin soldier out of a window through an improbable series of fish related events. The tin soldier makes his way home to the house of the boy who we only see for a brief moment. A boy who has tin soldiers and a ballerina doll. Yeah. What an open-minded family.
I just realized that.
Impeccable.
I love it. And then they and then he throws the bad boy in the fire and they fall in love forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
perfect.
Wow.
In terms of animation, it was styled very differently because you incorporate some of that 3D element. It was mm-hmm. like very cel-shaded 3D animation, I feel like.
It just goes to show you how far they have come and how many different programs they've had to invent just to shade things and texture things. Yeah. And like it's just very amazing to me because I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
So in a way, I feel bad being an armchair critic about it. But it's interesting to see what once passed as a finalized product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing, too. I mean, the way that this was animated, I was very impressed. I was like, oh, this is cool. This isn't like the whale one where you could see like the squeaky cog. You know what I mean? You were sort of just like, oh, this is done really smartly. Like, this feels like sort of 2D, 3D, like hybrid.
Like they're kind of leaning into the strengths to make it work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, doing toys is smart because they can look like sort of plasticky and flat.
Yeah, right. We talked about it when we were watching because Toy Story, the original Toy Story, looks a little rough if you watch mm-hmm. it back That's right. now. But I think it was you said that it was smart that they did toys because they're plastic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So I think Toy Story was 1995, mm-hmm. right? That's amazing.
Not that long.
Isn't that crazy?
After?
That's wow. really amazing.
Wait, yeah. wait, that was before this.
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
yeah.
If you look at pictures from the original Toy Story and then like Toy Story 3, Woody and Buzz look completely different. Oh, yeah.
I read a fun fact that they couldn't find a Jack in the Box very easily to model this after because wow. it's not a very prominent toy, or at the time wasn't.
They're scary as
it's
shit.
So scary. Yeah.
Watch
it's
Elf.
Based on fear, right?
yeah. The Watch idea Elf. Is like, I hope you enjoy being frightened, little baby.
Yeah.
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 They're like in all those horror movies where it's like, bam, 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 bam.
You don't know when it's gonna get you, but it's gonna yes! get you. Oh, that's so not scary. Fun. That's yeah. not fun.
I don't enjoy being frightened.
So no. he's a great villain.
Yeah.
yeah he's
but
a great opinion.
He reminded me a lot of Frollo. You know, because he's rapey. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had that like dark energy about him.
And
yeah.
like very, very entitled.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just decided he owned her body.
Yeah.
You know,
this segment did give me an Imagineering with Rachel. Uh-huh. So like when the toy soldier gets bumped into a boat and then slides down like drains and stuff, I was like, oh, this is a boat ride.
I could see it as like even like a water park ride. Like I mean, yeah. Disney doesn't have a water park.
They do too.
They do.
Tokyo
they have
sea?
Two. Yeah,
wait, for real? Where?
Tokyo Sea too. I've never been,
oh,
but they in Florida they have Typhoon Lagoon and Blizzard Beach.
Oh, ooh. Cool.
Yeah.
So like it would be cool to have that same thing, but like you're going down a slide, like it's a
oh
water
yeah
slide thing.
Yeah.
Because that or like even ride a little
yeah,
boat, but it's just like. Cause it, yeah, it feels very much like
it
a
just,
slide.
Yeah.
And then the Jack in the Box like pops out at you.
Oh,
and
the rats!
Slide and it's scary.
All the rats!
Oh, all the rats! And then you like fall down.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Yeah, so it's like in Universal Studios how it's the T-Rex in the
oh,
Jurassic
the
Park.
Oh, the T-Rex comes swinging
yeah,
out at you.
Yeah. So it's like the rats, and then you just drop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then at the end, you walk out and you're between the tin soldier and the ballerina and they're
yeah.
kissing.
Yeah.
You wake, yeah, you get up and then you realize like, oh, my leg's missing. And then you get it at the end of the ride.
Yeah, yeah. They take your leg off and then they give it back to you.
And they give
now
it
that's
back.
Imagineering.
Now that's a full experience.
Yeah.
like immersive wanna, theater.
Cool. Let's rate this.
Okay.
Out of five missing legs.
I would give it a 3.5. I think it similarly hooked me with the drama like the whales.
Uh-huh.
I had some problems with the animation, but overall, I liked it.
I'm going to say, I wanted to say 3, but comparing it to the nachos, I like this one a little bit better, so 3.5.
Yeah, I'll also give this a 3.5. It's like right smack in the middle for me.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this one a lot. I'm giving it a 4, but there were just like a couple things where I was like, what? Why is that? That I wanted to see more of, more development. So I'm giving it... 4 missing legs. So James Earl Jones.
Yes.
Mufasa.
That resonant voice.
I know. That voice.
The voice of fathers.
So Carnival of the Animals, it's just the one little short. I'm actually not sure which song this is. Carnival of the Animals I know is, I don't know if you would call it a symphony, I guess, but it's like made up of a ton of different pieces. All based on different animals. And one of them, I think I played for you guys before, is called Aquarium. And it sounds very similar to the opening of Beauty and the Beast. That was obviously not this one because this is the flamingos with yo-yos.
Oh, I love this
one. This was divine.
And it was the shortest one, too.
Yeah. So this is the one that Eric Goldberg animated by himself, and it took him 9 months to do it.
Oh. Well, I get it because it's totally. Like one of the most intricate pieces of animation I've ever seen in my whole freaking life.
It's like little dance.
Also, it just shows off how much Eric Goldberg is like funny as an animator too, because he also did Genie, and Genie is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. So it's like a bunch of flamingos, and then there's one.
Caitlin.
Oh my god!
Do it.
Oh no, I can't do it the way you can.
Caitlin.
How's
that play by play?
Oh no. Oh no.
I'm gonna do it the same as Claire would have.
No. I'm so sorry. I don't even know how I forgot. I'm so sorry.
This is much too much.
I didn't mean to offend or take your job. Oh my god, Caitlin.
Do you
want to
say it together? Do you want to say it at the same time? There's.
No, this
doing
is gonna
great.
Take too long.
I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna let you take it from there.
Yeah. There's a bunch of flamingos. They're an elegant flock and they're all in tune. Mm-hmm. But there is one wackadoo yo-yo boy who can't be brought in line. He loves to play.
Yeah.
And his antics get the whole flock aflitter. And in the end, he decides to just embrace it and get a bunch of yo-yos and have a glorious time.
Ah. See, yeah. I would have said that. I would never have said flock of flitter. That's genius.
Just, I don't agree. I think we could have done it together and it would have been perfect.
Hashtag flock of flitter.
Flock of flitter.
I love that.
Hey, if you want to give us a shout out on Twitter, it's hashtag flock of flitter.
Flock of flitter. I'm not going to forget that.
Hashtag flock of flitter.
So, yeah, we got one little goofball and it's just like a fun dance. Like, I don't know where these flamingos are going, but they have business.
Yeah.
So very similar to those soldiers. They march along and then the one guy is just going the wrong direction. He's hiding a yo-yo, but he incorporates it into their choreographed dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's not much to say. It's just great.
It's just fun.
It's a simple story. It truly is, I think, introduced by James. I also think that that part was funny too when James Earl Jones was like making this very sophisticated talk and then the animator just like taps him on the
shoulder.
That
was Eric Goldberg.
Great. A really funny piece. He gives him a piece of paper and then James Earl Jones is like, what happens when you give a flamingo a yo-yo? And that's all we see.
Out of 5 flocks of flitter, what do you guys give this?
5
Short,
five all the
sweet,
way.
Colorful, beautiful, funny.
The colors are perfect. Mm. To me, the most impressive thing about this one is perspective. Yeah. How it all shifted when they were like skating by. We saw, you know what I mean, lateral. We saw horizontal. I mean, it was just like insane. Just like how it just went up when it got stuck in the tree. Like we were taken on a ride. This really felt like a ride and we were just like caught off guard the entire time. Based on a really easy, simple premise, we still found ways to like explore that and make it new. You know? Oh, so great.
It is so fun. You can make something fun out of anything.
Yeah.
Like literally, like you said, it's like what happens when you give a flamingo a yo-yo?
Yeah.
This fun little bit, that's what happens. Then we meet Penn and Teller,
mm-hmm.
who
mm-hmm.
do some real fun magic.
They did. Yeah. And they had cute bunnies.
Yeah, they milked their intro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They really made the most of it. And so they intro Sorcerer's Apprentice, which, of course, we have seen before mm-hmm. because this is the Mac Daddy of Fantasia.
The runaway hit. Yeah.
So, and we all know Sorcerer Mickey. And as we talked about before, he's not really Sorcerer Mickey. He's a fraud.
Yeah.
He's the apprentice.
He's pretending to be the
sorcerer.
So
anytime you see him in the park, you say, hey, you're not a sorcerer.
Give that hat back.
You're apprentice that's Mickey, and that's a stolen hat.
Yeah. Whenever they see the hat in the parks, he's like, that's not Mickey's.
Yeah. You say, you call the Disney police. Yeah. You get them on the case.
Call their real police. Call the FBI.
Call FBI.
Yeah. Even though we've seen this before, I didn't remember a lot of it.
It was quite violent.
Yeah, very violent.
Like, and I mean, obviously I remember like what happens, but yeah, it's always more violent than I remember. I forgot that he hacks up his little broom friend after a fair portion of the short goes by. And that's when we get the army of brooms.
Yeah. Mm. Caitlin, do you want to give us a play-by-play on this one?
Oh my
God. Do we need it?
Yes.
Yeah.
We do. See, that's why I was like, oh, no one wants to talk about it. I'm sorry. I just keep trying to jump in. I keep taking your thunder.
I love it. We can. Thunder is for sharing. That's what I always say.
That is the old adage. Yeah, that is the adage.
There's no way.
My mama taught me.
Oh my gosh. Caitlin, stop sharing my thunder.
Won't you share my thunder?
Caitlin, take your thunder back.
Mickey has a job for some reason. He's working for a sorcerer whose name is racially problematic, as I recall.
Is it?
I don't know. It's like Senshu or something.
It's Yensid, which borderline. Is Disney spelled backwards.
I take it all back.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if that's what you saw, that's what you saw.
No, I was wrong.
That's part of the synopsis now.
Mickey is tired of hauling water. The sorcerer goes off to, we don't know, take a nap. Mickey takes his hat and puts it on and gets the magic, but he's not good at it because he's just an assistant. So he makes his broom carry the buckets of water, and things get out of hand, and there's too much water. So Mickey pulls out a gleaming axe that tings off the light in a way that is disturbing, hacks the axe to tiny slivers, goes back to sleep. I don't remember that part. And then the axe turns into a million brooms that all haul too much water. It's scary. It's stressful. Everything's bad. The sorcerer comes back and fixes everything, and Mickey has learned a lesson in humility.
Yes.
Wow.
That was flawless. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly it.
Is it? Do you agree? Was it too hot of a take that Mickey has gotten less cute?
No, I understand what you're saying, because while we were watching, Caitlin was saying, wow, he's so cute in the 40s version, but then they sort of show him 3D. That's right. And I think it just goes to show the difference between the hand drawing and the computer. Like, there's some little bit of personality that just makes him look different.
Yeah, and I think, like, his eyes were smaller. He just seemed, like, less little and round.
I mean, he is pretty old.
He does change.
I'm being too hard on the boy.
There have been a bunch of different iterations of Mickey, like Steamboat Willie Mickey, very different from even Sorcerer's Apprentice Mickey.
And then Mickey in the 80s, they started drawing on eyebrows.
That's right, yeah.
He has eyebrows.
Oh. The 80s were all about the brows.
Yeah.
So cartoon characters needed them too.
Looked at Brooke Shields and they said, give Mickey that.
Mickey in the parks, I don't think that it's here at Disneyland, but the one in Disney World, he talks to you.
Huh?
Yeah.
You mean the character that you meet?
Yeah. Oh. He talks to you and he blinks too.
Is that allowed?
Yeah.
I've definitely seen the blinking.
Yeah.
But the talking, oh boy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that like a big upheaval in the Disney world?
No.
I think things just kind of change and morph naturally. Yeah. And
they're like technology.
Yeah. That's how it is.
Interesting.
If they give it to you, you gotta take it.
Yeah.
Wow.
You gotta take it how it comes.
So how was this revisiting this short for you guys? You were a little shook, yeah?
I was like, what? When he falls asleep and then he goes up and starts doing magic in his sleep and has an out-of-body sleep experience and then hacks the broom. And then also when Yensid gives him a little swat or spank at the end, it was a little more harsh than I remember it being. Because I remember the first time I was like, oh, it was a little like, oh, shame on you. But this time it was more violent.
I mean, they didn't change it. It's still the same.
I'm convinced they changed it. No. Fantasia 2000 revamped.
To make it meaner.
Yeah.
The 90s were like a heady time. There was a lot of violence in video games. Like the kids needed a big swatting.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a thing where like nowadays Disney is a little bit more like less dark. Whereas in the beginning, like the original Fantasia, this wasn't as dark seeming because it was like it was sandwiched in between like Turnabog and then like I don't know that
the dinosaurs eating
dinosaurs
each other.
Yeah. So it's like this was more of a lighthearted one and the regular Fantasia.
Maybe I was just seeing what I wanted to see before.
Yeah,
let me ask you guys this, does it hold up?
I don't know, it's a classic.
I can't see it without, like, all the associations that come with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't say if it holds up.
I like it. I think it's good. It was longer than I remembered. What do you think, Austin?
I mean, I didn't like it back then. I don't like it now. It's
it's whack.
It's weird how, it, like, big that has become because, like, now when we see Disney. Now when we see Mickey, we see Sorcerer Mickey.
Yeah.
He's like big. That's the Mickey we see other than the regular like tuxedo, like red pants one. But so it's like weird that has lasted so long.
That is interesting. Yeah. Cause also like Mickey's done everything. Mickey's was on the Beanstalk. He was Jack. You know, he's just done. He was a mouse.
He's like Barbie, you know. He has so many different careers.
Oh, he's so many careers.
But the one
he's
that the we boy remember Barbie. The most is
the biggest one we know. Maybe it's because like they want to associate Disney and Mickey with magic, and that's when he's being a sorcerer. He has magic.
I will say that the thing that I took away from this one that I didn't really get in the original Fantasia was that when Mickey was activating his powers, it was like a conductor orchestrating an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Like even when he was like summoning the broom henchmen, like at the very beginning, it felt very like the come hither was very like, oh, that's what a conductor would do. Like very overemphasizing the hands and stuff. So I was just like, oh, when the water is splashing around, that's just what an orchestra, what do you call those people?
Conductor.
Yeah, I said it and I immediately forgot. Yeah, orchestrator.
Like, yeah.
A conductor. That's what a conductor would do, right? So I was like, oh, that's the unifying thing here. Okay, magic equals music equals conductor. Yeah. Cool, I get it. Cool.
And he's just playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we rate this one?
Yeah. Out of 5 brooms.
It is hard because I know it's a classic, so it feels hard to be be rough on it. But compared to the enjoyment from the others, I would say 3.5 brooms. I'll dig in. I do think it's like good. It's a fun little narrative, but you know, it's not like the most exciting. I mean, it's cool animation too, and that's the other thing I think you have to remember too is that this was at the time doing things that we had never seen before. So that's very cool as well. Like all the water and the splitting and the everything.
Yeah. The water animation is cool. I'll give it 2.5. Mm-hmm. I mean, narratively, I just like was not on board with it. It was like weird. I mean, I guess narratively everything fit the song pretty good. I didn't like the really violent like axe thing. I really was just like, whoa, this is like intense. It's too intense.
Okay, I've thought about it. I would give it 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a middle rating.
Yeah, I give it a 3.5 middle.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh my God, Angela, Dame Angela.
No, so Mickey introduces this next one. Oh, you're right. Which is Pomp and Circumstance
with the conductor, Mr. Levine. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Caitlin, tell us what this one's about.
The Bible is real, y'all. God has smoten the earth, and Noah, for some reason, needs help. He's like not in it that much because that would get too religious. But Donald is Noah's assistant. Donald lives in a little egg-shaped house where he drinks and lives in a hammock. Daisy is a hot babe, which I hope we'll get to discuss. And so they get all the animals onto the ark with Donald's help. And Donald and Daisy get separated and their hearts are breaking. And they eat 40 days on the ark and they keep missing each other. And it's a real comedy of errors. Along came Polly type of situation. And then they get off the ark and the land has returned to the earth and everything is nice, but their hearts are broken because they've lost each other. And then they both reach down for a golden locket and they're both alive. And they walk off into the rainbow.
Yay.
And do it. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Now, Pomp
and it's implied.
Yeah, I mean, it is implied. Pomp and Circumstance is the graduation song.
Well, they talk about this in the intro to it. They're like, even though everyone thinks this is a graduation song, it was intended to be used for other events as well. It was a
defensive intro.
It was very defensive.
Yeah, I was like, okay, hold on. Before you all say this is a graduation song, it's used for that. But also don't forget we have the Vitamin C graduation song. We have a Green Day, Time of Your Life. We have Yesterday by the Beatles. Like, there are all kinds of songs that can be graduation songs. This song can be used for any major event, such as a giant flood.
Weird. I couldn't stop thinking about graduation the entire time.
When the animals were walking on the ark and walking off the ark, it was always to that part where it's like,
it was always the march.
It was always the march. Like, oh, okay.
So also this one was fun because all of the animals in it looked like animals from some other movie.
We also couldn't stop screaming Disney movies.
We were having a fun time trying to think of which one.
When the animals were all going to the ark, it was very reminiscent of Circle of Life.
Yes.
Oh, so Circle of Life. Yeah. And so
there were little skunks that looked just like Thumper.
Yeah.
Flower.
Yeah. Thank you.
There were chameleons like in Tangled. There were.
Yeah.
There were just tons of everything.
There were hippos like in Fantasia.
There were bush babies like in that movie they have about the African jungle. Is that a thing that exists? It's like a live action movie, isn't there?
Huh?
There's probably a Disney nature movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There was orangutans like Tarzan.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's fun. I mean, I would encourage you guys to watch this segment and just like count how many animals you recognize from other Disney films. It's really fun.
Yeah.
I think our tally is what, 250? I'm kidding.
Something like that. 200 something.
But it was really fun because, it's the story of Noah's Ark, which most of us are familiar with. I'm happy Donald gets to be in it. He's it harkens back to our little package films where Donald seemed to be like everywhere, you know? So it was like a cool little thing to see him again. Yeah. I love Donald.
Me
Donald
too. Really cool. Scamp. He's my favorite of the Fab Five.
My favorite Disney character is Daisy Duck because she is so sassy.
Yeah.
She's so sassy and fun. Like, she's just so cool. I really love her. Oh, she's so fun.
She was wearing a cool robe in this too. Yeah. It was like a hooded robe.
Yeah.
Yes.
She made
she
it
came
fashion.
Out looking like Prince of Egypt. Yeah. Gorgeous.
We all know the daisies in our life, right? They're like that girl that's like with that guy who's like kind of a little bit too much, but she's like all like put together and like whatever.
Yeah.
And like
that's so me. Like,
yeah, if you don't know the daisy, you are the daisy. Dump him.
She's always wearing like cool outfits and like big shawls and stuff.
Yeah, and you're like, why are you with him? He like yells when things go wrong.
And she's like, what up?
Like,
I don't
fine.
Think I know anybody in real life like that.
Oh, I know people,
I know
like,
people
that.
Like that.
Definitely know people like that.
I don't know a lot of people though, to be fair. So anyway,
Claire, get out of the vault sometime. Yeah.
It's really, I mean, it was just funny. It was silly. Very, very. It's a very silly take on Noah's Ark, but also had a lot of heart when they found each other. We were all like,
I was moved. I was genuinely.
I thought so. Yeah, me too. When they reunited again in the rainbow. Oh, it was just great.
It was so funny when Donald was throwing the doves off of the ship. Because
he was mad that they were happy.
Yeah. They were like being affectionate with each other, but they're doves. So he just flew right down.
Oh, that's
and
so funny.
Kissing the lady dove's wing. Like,
yeah, it felt like Gomez and Adams. Yeah. And Morticia Adams. Yeah.
The greatest couple of all time.
The great,
true. They're the couple
honestly,
I want to be.
Relationship goals for sure.
For sure.
Oh my God.
Mm. Yeah,
I love this one. So I thought this was so funny. And again, simple. It's like beautiful narrative, easy, fun. You get to see Donald fail a whole bunch and then win at the very end.
All right. Okay. Let's rate it out of 5 lockets.
Had
to be.
I'm going to give it 4 because the music was throwing me off a lot. I liked the animation, but it could have been set to something else that fit it better.
That's exactly how I feel. And I felt I tried to separate myself from being like, it's graduation music. And I was like, even so, I don't think it fits that well with the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes Donald grates on me, not in this one. Mm-hmm. But I think my association is like, oh, my God, get your shit together. I think it was a 4 for me. Yeah. But it was lovely and fun.
I don't know if the music really bothered me that much, though I was like, graduation! Mm-hmm. But I'm going to give this one a 4.5.
Yeah.
Just because I wasn't as in love with it as the New York one.
Yeah. I will also give this a 4.5 because I think it was a miss to pick this song. Out of all of the like songs you could have picked,
yeah,
you
they
just,
didn't have to pick this song.
For some reason, they were like, we need to get the, like, they were like, this is the torch that we lie on. Like the graduation song, we're trying to evolve the graduation song, where
can't
it's like
done.
I don't know if you guys did that, you know, but as its own story, I really really love this one.
Yeah.
So then after that we get
Angela Lansbury.
Angela Lansbury,
Disney legend.
Yeah,
she didn't have
great.
A ton to do, but just seeing her on screen was a treat.
What a welcoming presence.
So this is the Firebird.
Oh, this is where it ends. This is the last one.
Yeah, this is the last one.
We need you.
Bambi's dad trots through the spooky, cold winter forest. He goes and he swims into a cave, which makes me nervous because hypothermia. He awakes with his hot breath a beautiful drag queen. I wish I could claim credit for that idea, but Oscar's like, that's a drag look. She's a springtime spirit, a delicate mop, and she flies
delicate
around.
Mop?
She flies.
That's her drag name.
Delicata mop. She flies around causing spring, and then she goes into a caldera and knocks on a form, and yikes, it's Chernopog. It's the Firebird, and the Firebird sets fire to the whole forest. Everything is scary and bad, and then it's ash and it's devastating. Somehow the elk caribou has survived. He breathes hot breath in the dust again. She doesn't want to get the fuck up. She's depressed. She can't get out of bed right now. She's having a bad week. But he insists because he loves her, and he throws her onto his back, and a tear falls from her eye for the ruined forest. And where the drops fell, green things spring up. And she sees that, and she says, life from the ashes. And she flies up into the sky and rejuvenates the forest. And the elk looks back as if to say, good job, maybe my girlfriend.
Maybe my girlfriend.
Well
oh,
said.
Oh, man. Well yeah, said. I could not have found better words.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, this did you pull up a picture?
This is the picture of Tafiti from Moana.
Yeah, because when I was watching it, I was like, that looks like Tafiti.
It really does. She's just a beautiful green earth goddess made of earth.
It could be her.
Yeah, they look the same. We should do a side by side.
Ooh.
Side by side.
Side by side. And it's a visual segment, so you're going to have to check out Instagram. So yeah, what's up with the relationship between, I guess it's like a caribou or something, and this spring
he's the prince
spirit.
Of the forest.
They're like elemental guys.
Yeah. Like in a way, I kind of like that there's no real reason. He's just like, hey, this is my friend. I got to go wake her up.
It made me feel like one of those like weird old Norse symbolic mythologies where like when it's time for the spring to come, the elk spirit rides into the, you know.
It's also like a trope too in a lot of mythology where the elk is a symbol of like God, honestly. Yeah. Oh. Like you have, this is a Disney movie, but it's a live action one in Snow White and the Huntsman. There's the white elk.
Disney.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Oops. But it's based on Snow White, I guess.
Are you talking about Mists of Avalon?
An idea that's in the
It's an idea that
universe.
You use. But also, to me, the thing that was the most similar to was Princess Mononoke, where there is that.
It totally made
right. It's that elk creature. And it deals with similar subject matter. And also the way that it was animated reminded me very much of like anime. Mm-hmm. Like the smoothness of the animation.
It made me
feel
like Spirited Away. Yeah.
And the way that like hair and like leaves and dress and everything sort of blends together.
It was
in this
beautiful.
It reminded me of a Miyazaki film for sure.
There was a lot of gasping while we were watching that.
It's just gorgeous.
Because she's like this like sea foam, but it like I don't think she actually sparkles, but I would believe it if she did.
Mm-hmm.
So she just kind of sweeps over everything and makes it beautiful. And she seems like she's having a good time, too.
Yes.
Like, it's like her job, but she likes her job.
She loves her job. Yeah. Yes.
You're so right. Yes. And, like, they're friends. And then, like, there's the heartbreak when we think she goes away.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
she turns into Baby Groot and regenerates.
Baby Groot.
That, like, fight scene with the Firebird and her where he's, like, chasing after her as lava is so epic and so amazing. It is like truly the most one of those moments where you're just like, oh no, you know what I mean? It really was like high action point, you know?
It feels bad to slam Mickey, but I think in a way it's like what the Sorcerer's Apprentice might have been like 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh my God, this is what animation can do. Like it's this high stakes, like human drama, but in this like really gorgeous stylized way.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, everything about this was so smooth. So gorgeous. Even the elk animation, when you look into his eyes, you're just like, whoa, there's something in there, which is, I mean, what a feat of animation is that? Like, that's crazy to like show life through just someone drawing something. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So the Firebird sequence depicts the eruption of the volcano Mount St. Helens in 1980.
Oh, no way.
I love that.
Well, let's rate this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of five.
Out of five anything,
really. Oh, sorry, I forgot.
Five anything, really.
Yeah. How many anything reallys really do you give this one? Five. Just going to say five.
Five. Sparkling five.
4.5.
Yeah. 10. 20. I mean, what a way to end it. I just thought it was so freaking cool.
I do want to hear what the 0.5 was, though.
Oh, I just like the other one better, so comparing.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Wait, did you give it a...
4.5.
Oh, 4.5. I thought you said 5.5.
No.
Dang. Wait, okay.
You like the New York better.
The New York is your peak.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it had more humanity
The
to
New York
it.
Is the five chip bugs. What was it? Chip creatures? Chip... Animals.
Rivets?
Rivets?
Crispy critters?
I was going back to the crispy critter scale. Yeah.
It's
a different scale. Critters. It's a different scale.
Different scale.
Yeah.
And then it ends. I mean, it just sort of again, ends abruptly,
it's just
right?
Credits yeah. over the orchestra.
Which is like, oh man, back to basics, Disney. You're doing it again.
Is that their jam?
I mean, that was their jam forever. Just like
we're done. That's yeah. it.
Yeah, it was like, we ran out of paper.
Bye. End of the movie. Get out of here. We're lights tired. On, go home.
Out of the theater. Do you guys want to try rating this one the whole movie?
Yeah.
Okay. Out of five, Bette Midler's.
Okay, I like that. Out of five Bette Midlers, how many Bette Midlers do you give Fantasia 2000?
I will say I can't decide between 3.5 and 4, which is so much higher than I thought. Because I really did enjoy the whole thing. It was great. It was pretty and fun. And obviously it's a different pace than we've been getting used to and mm-hmm. having mm-hmm. narratives and musicals. But if you're in the mood for it, it's a great time. So I'm going to go ahead and say 4 Bette Midlers.
I would give this also a 4, which, I mean, first of all, it is so funny to me. Fantasia 2000 gets a bit of a bad rap, I feel like, because it is so, people dismiss it.
It's true. I had never seen it before, and it was like, I don't need to see it.
Because people think it's like an extension of Fantasia or like a sequel to something that they didn't really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And it's not like the movies that we're familiar with. It's not Hercules. It's not, you know what I mean, Mulan. It's not any of those. But I think, to me, it is, again, it's paying homage to like the very beginning of Disney and just doing a modern twist to it in our pacing, which is like Fantasia 2000 is more Fantasia than the original Fantasia. And like, man,
just
I
like
really
the
enjoyed it.
Rescuers Down Under is more rescuers than rescuers.
That's very true. Yeah. So yeah, it gets a 4 from me.
I'm going to give this one a 3.5. I enjoyed it a lot, but I'm reserving my 4s for other movies.
I think 4, maybe even 4.5.
What?
Caitlin Hempstead. Loved it. And I went in expecting nothing. And I just feel like if you want to see like the most gifted musicians and animators and storytellers in the world just like playing and doing the most inventive, incredible things. Like as a child, I don't think I would have liked this. Mm-hmm. But as a woman,
ooh, as a Daisy.
Thank you.
As a Minnie, no.
But as an on the theory that Minnie is an old woman, maybe.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it, and I thank you for making me watch it.
Caitlin.
What a gift.
That's so refreshing. And you gave a little quick shout out, but we didn't talk about all segments were performed by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra with mm-hmm. conductor James Levine. Except where noted. So I think
Adam
there's like
Levine's cousin.
Obviously the
much older cousin. Who is just a cute little old man.
Oscar, wait. Less 6 months into Oscar, you did say that that person was you.
Yeah, like 10 years from now, I will turn into James.
Yeah, should we
cast ourselves?
Out of any character.
Each other,
yeah,
yes.
Okay. Out of any character we saw in the film.
Wait, who did Oscar say he was again? I forget.
James
Levine.
James Levine.
The conductor, that weird, awkward little man.
His timing was weird.
But we can also cast Oscar as any other character.
Oscar could also be the assistant to that rich lady with the glasses.
Oh, yeah. John Colhane.
Oh, the husband.
Just
because
I want to see you play that.
Oh, gosh, that would be so great. I truly feel like I am that man. Yeah,
you could nail it.
For sure. Yeah. Dreams he could fly? Are you kidding me? Yes. Dances with a bunch of women in a jazz club? Uh-huh.
Okay, Claire.
What else we got?
I don't know, Claire. I feel like you might be the forest sprite.
Oh,
yes.
My God. That honestly is like the nicest thing anyone has ever said to me.
Yes,
that's
forest sprite,
much.
For sure.
That's
yeah.
That's too much.
I think it's true.
That's so nice.
Yeah, you're so caring, gentle. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that was the closest thing in the movie to a Disney princess. And
agreed.
I think it fits you.
Agreed.
Oh, my
agreed.
God.
Agreed. Okay, Rachel.
I'm going to cry.
Rachel is.
Now I'm blanking on all of the things
I think I know
watched.
Who Rachel is.
Oh. Say it.
Rachel is Donald Duck.
Oh.
Rachel is, I think, Donald Duck.
I hate everyone in relationships.
You've got so much love to give.
Yeah.
You just want to help, but you also love a hammock.
Yeah. I wish these doves would get away from each other.
Oh my goodness.
And Caitlin.
I think I might have a theory.
Oh,
I did scream out, "It's me," when this character came on screen. The little girl.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking,
for sure.
But I didn't.
She's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, you are that little girl.
It's appropriate to cast herself.
No, you are that. Yeah. That's what I was going to say, but then I was like, oh, she has her heart on something
else.
Oh,
no.
I screamed, "That's me."
That's
the crispy butterfly.
Yep.
I want to fight the
one triangle and thought, that's it.
Doritos, that's me.
Yeah. Hey, Caitlin, where can we find you on the internet?
Oh, baby.
What? You made me choke up.
Oh, boy.
I'm sick. I host the podcast Lizard People. It's about conspiracy theories, and I debate with my guests. I'm a skeptic. And I also host I write and perform for a scripted podcast called Hollow Public Radio, which is scripted science fiction comedy, as if NPR existed in an interdimensional space.
Oh, fun.
And just follow me on Twitter. It's Caitlin Hempstead, because I couldn't fit in the D.
Oh.
Just Caitlin Hempstead.
What?
Yeah, Hempstead.
Yeah. Great. Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Caitlin, thank you so much for being a guest on this podcast.
Thank you for having me.
This was
a delight.
A blast. Truly, truly
so
a blast.
Fun. Don't look now, Oscar. There's a giant whale floating.
Oh my God.
Toward us.
Okay, well, don't look now, Claire, but there's a giant firebird flying right behind you.
Hey guys, don't look now, but I'm eating all these Doritos.
Oh, I'm looking at all of them.
Guys, we gotta run. Thanks for listening to Inside the Disney Vault. I've been Oscar.
I've been Rachel.
I'm Claire. I'm always Caitlin.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Amanda Salvatore.
And I'm Jackie Ray Arbell, and we are the hosts of
Guilty Pleasure, the podcast that celebrates, elaborates, and experiences our odd interests.
We talk with comedians, writers, and artists about their chosen guilty pleasure, like LARPing, Burning Man, Keanu Reeves, Allen Iverson, television shows, 60s and 70s rock and roll, and the list basically goes on and on and on.
If you'd like to check us out, we have a new episode every single Monday.
Delivered to you from Campfire Media. Find us on iTunes or anywhere that you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Campfire.